Thank you. Thank you. So for those of you that arrived late and were looking forward to seeing the person whose picture is actually in your guide, that would be one Laura Levitin. It's not a joke. I'm not Laura, obviously. But I'm actually filling in for Laura, who unfortunately couldn't be with us today. But she really wished she could be here. But we felt that this information was too important to completely and totally pull. So I will be doing my best effort to actually fill Laura's shoes, which are enormous shoes. So actually, no relationships to disclosure, both for myself and for Laura. So just to give you an overview of what I'm going to be talking today, I'm just going to focus on kind of what are challenges in general within our field when it comes to implementing evidence-based programs, what the current state of practice is, and really discuss about shifting paradigms from what it is that we currently do, and give you a little hint of what Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is trying to do in this space, and talk about what our vision is. But probably most importantly, we want to really focus on kind of your input on what it is that we can do to help spur work in this field. So what's our challenge? Well, you know, nobody would argue with you that our goal is really to promote widespread adoption and implementation of evidence-based models. That's what we all look to achieve. And our ultimate fantasy is that the context within replication will mirror exactly the study conditions. But unfortunately, we know that there's actually great variation in context of those places that we're hoping to take evidence-based models too, and this variation really varies determining on population, the setting within which we want to implement evidence-based approaches, the resources that exist to implement these approaches, etc. So given these challenges, then what we want to really find out is how do we adjust our current approaches in which we try to spur the implementation of evidence-based practice, and not only to say that it's simply about increasing the dissemination of the information, because we do know that that's a challenge. Sometimes practitioners don't even know that there are various evidence-based approaches and resources out there. But we also want to understand, as we're spurring the implementation of evidence-based approaches, how can we systematically learn what it is about these programs and approaches that can and cannot be adapted? What's actually something that's taking you away from what the program's really intended to do, which will then influence the effectiveness of that program? But then lastly, probably what we really want to do is how can we then take this information, this wealth of information that's really generated from all of the practitioners, and disseminate what it is that we're learning about adaptation to then further promote replication of models. When I really think about some of the literature that's come out, especially with relation to healthcare, you know, there's a number out there that people talk about all the time, and it's a little disheartening when people say, you know, it takes 17 years for something that's generated in research to actually make it into practice. 17 years. When you think about that actually happening, like in technology, could you imagine if it took 17 years for the Intel processor to actually make it into computers? You know how far behind we'd be right now? We'd still be working on punch cards and mainframes. So when we think about the work that we do, the conventional research and development approach is really about, you know, you develop an approach, you try to stabilize that model, and then you test whether or not you actually have a model approach that has some legs to it. And then if it does have legs, then we say, you know, we say this is an evidence-based approach. And again, you know, we look to disseminate the model approach and hope that there's some type of uptake by the practice community in implementing it. And sometimes we have some situations in which we actually assess the fidelity. You know, there are implementation researchers out there that actually try to understand how it is that individuals are implementing evidence-based approaches. But usually that's where it stops. And what happens is this really doesn't generate much knowledge for the general community. So how can we really shift the paradigm from just stopping our learnings from the peer review publication that tells us there's evidence that this works, and stop shifting it from such a big focus to keeping fidelity to the model to an actual focus in which we're talking about fidelity to effectiveness? Because this is really what we're interested in. We're really interested in programs that can produce the same types of outcomes that the original tested peer review program did. So So just one example of how this is, you know, actually currently in practice, Pronovost back in 2006 and colleagues published a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine in which they looked at an intervention to reduce central line infections, which is a big issue in hospitals. And what they saw was, you know, the intervention that they were looking at was a checklist. For those of you who are familiar with a medical checklist, Atul Gawande actually wrote a book, The Checklist Manifesto, but it's a very well-known intervention that helps to reduce medical errors. Well, when Pronovost and colleagues looked at the intervention and its application in Michigan, they found that it wasn't actually just one checklist that all the hospitals were using, but it was hundreds of different checklists that they had to adapt and apply within their make it relevant within their practice settings. And similarly, some work by Wilcox and colleagues looked at Active for Life, looked at two community-based interventions for older populations and looked at the actual adaptation and implementation of those interventions within practice settings, and were actually able to show that with certain adjustments and tweaks that they had to make given the differences in the setting characteristics, they were still able to maintain effectiveness in the program's impact. So again, kind of looking at this model in which we have your conventional R&D, can we then expand it so that it includes space for us to not only test and stamp a program evidence-based and promote uptake, but also can we then analyze the context, adapt the program to the context, analyze and discuss really what those adaptations are like, then redevelop the approach and revise the model again for the context and the situation. And we believe that in kind of expanding this loop that allows for additional changes and adaptations can actually promote much more generalizable knowledge that will be much more helpful to the practitioner community. And so one of the frameworks that we feel will probably be very useful in thinking about adaptation and how you can really integrate fast, rapid ways to learn about what level of effectiveness you're having with adaptations of programs is some work that comes out of our colleagues in the healthcare field. How many of you are familiar with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement? IHI, yeah. So Model for Improvement, this should look familiar to you. You know, one of the aspects within that model is the Plan, Do, Study, Act framework, which for those of you that aren't familiar with this work, it's the traditional conventional kind of program development, implementation, evaluation framework. But what it really promotes is a rapid way, again, to assess and understand and generate information that can then be woven in to the program. And so if you look at this slide, what it proposes is multiple Plan, Do, Study, Act. It's called rapid cycle improvement within the continuous quality improvement framework. And so what you envision is, you know, practitioners being able to take an original program, you know, adjusting it, tweaking it, you know, within a week or two being able to take their data, make adjustments accordingly, again implement it, but with a wider range of individuals, and then adjust accordingly again until it becomes part of their standard practice. And some of this work is already happening, and so just wanted to highlight a couple of resources that are available from our colleagues from the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention. They actually put out an adaptation guide for practitioners who are looking to adapt HIV behavior change interventions for the gay and bisexual Latino and Black male community. And within this, what they provide is a framework that is really, when you look at all the steps, it's really similar to what the Plan, Do, Study, Act framework is. And similarly, colleagues with ETR and in collaboration again with the Centers for Disease Control put together an adaptation kit around, again looking at HIV risk reduction, but in this case with teens. But what's interesting within this adaptation framework is that they provide an easy to understand green, yellow, red system. And so this just is a piece out of their book that looks at all of the activities within the intervention, and it highlights which activities in the green area can be adapted. So for example, if there's some role-playing scenarios and you want to make it culturally relevant, you can switch John to be Jose. But then they also highlight, you know, the yellow, which is proceed with caution, this may change the effectiveness. And then obviously the red, which means these are elements of the intervention which will definitely change its effectiveness, so please do not change. So what's RWJF doing this? Well, we're trying to really be intentional in examining adaptations of evidence-based program and examining them in relation to three different areas. Number one, we want to understand which adaptations are important because there's some challenge that exists that really prevents a practitioner's ability to replicate exactly what the original program was. But those adaptations, we do recognize that it's not about, you know, going from apples to oranges, but it's actually keeping the adaptation consistent with the model, but it's obvious that something needs to change. And then we also want to be able to understand the prevalence. How common are these challenges that practitioners face? And so if you think about a decision-making framework and how you decide what is and what is not worth sharing, then, you know, we want to understand, you know, again, is adaptation important and is it consistent with the model? Well, if those two are yes, then it's definitely something worth sharing. And lastly, which is probably the more important piece, is, you know, is the adaptation being made really prevalent within the practitioner community? And most importantly, if all three of these are yes, then it's something that we should systematically be understanding how it is that we can disseminate and get this information out there to the broader community. So a turkey, I'm sure you're probably all wondering why we have a turkey up here. How many of you cook Thanksgiving dinner, cook a turkey, or eat somebody else's turkey? Hands up. How many of you actually either follow your grandmother's recipe, mother's recipe, or go online for a recipe? Hands up, right? So, you know, allrecipes.com, right? Website online in which, in this case, there are 157 recipes, different recipes for roasted turkey, right? So, and I'm sure if you go through all, you know, individuals here, there's probably different tweaks and changes that people make to a roasted turkey recipe. Does that mean that the turkey's bad? No, right? No, it's just adjustments. So can we envision a day in which we have a way to share information with various colleagues where, you know, instead of turkeys up here, we have various interventions listed, and then you have a listing of how people adjust it and tweak it, and then they can actually review, you know, how that worked for them and why they changed it, why they didn't change it, and how it can be relevant. So, you know, ultimately, this is a place that we would love to be. We know we're not there yet, baby steps, but it's, you know, something, you know, that's something we could look for. So again, you know, this is something that we're really at the beginning, but we know that this is huge for spurring the implementation of evidence-based practice and also just lifting up practice-based evidence much more broadly, which a couple of my fellow presenters discussed. So what we really need to understand from you all is what areas are ripe for study, what are some potential pitfalls that we should really be aware of as we approach this work, and how can we best harness and disseminate knowledge more broadly. So that's my contact information. Thank you all.